Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would think of that. You thought about getting your own fucking house.
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's now time to do the roll call. My name's Marcus Speller and Jim Campbell's here.
Hello.
Pete Donaldson's here.
Good afternoon, morning, etc.
Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's the start of a new week. Obviously, it depends on when you're listening to this broadcast. But we are once again in each other's arms, and it's an absolute ruddy pleasure.
You can barely reach my arm. This is a big old table we're on.
Yeah, we need to get more microphones. This is a silly way to set up.
We need to have arm extensions. Everybody all right?
I'm all right. I enjoyed a weekend of football. The weekend we finally saw a Gary Cahill attempted Rabona, is what I'm calling it.
Yeah, it was...
I'm gonna get like a plate like with Gary Cahill attempting that Rabona and sell it for 80 quid in the Daily Mail, in the U magazine.
Or a blue plaque and just, in the night, just bolt it to his house.
We should at least have an anniversary for it. The thing is, like, just swing your boot at it. You could get a chance to shoot.
Yeah, well...
Extraordinary scenes at Anfield. But there we are. Gary Megson got a lovely point for West Brom, didn't he?
Just, he was so humble after the game. That was what was so enjoyable about it.
Was it
sounded like I was underwater then. We were talking about Blue Planet, so I've got a little bit of that.
You call an aquarium an aqua prison, which I very much enjoyed, Jim.
Yeah,
so
well.
A little little off. You can't use that in your stand-up now, so
no, I've,
that, busted
won't.
That on the ramble.
Don't worry. Gary Megson's humility, you're referring to when he said after the match that Spurs' methods that they'd use against Real Madrid didn't work against them.
Yeah, it weren't good enough. It weren't good enough. And also, like...
they can work against Real Madrid, can't work against us.
Not against me, said Pochettino, changed up the tactics 3 or 4 times, but still couldn't find enough of a way through.
I love it. Absolutely
he said as well, their
it.
Chance at the end was better than anything Spurs created. But Spurs scored.
I mean, not be funny, mate. Like, they were in the Champions League midweek at the top of their league. Yeah. It's, you know, ugh.
Uh-huh. All the sides that played in Europe really sort of struggled. I know a couple of them struggled, or three of them, Manchester United, Arsenal, and Manchester City, but they struggled for wins. They got the wins.
Leggy wins, though.
They were, and obviously Chelsea and Liverpool sort of cancelled each other out, you know, in a quite entertaining game. And Spurs, you know, people were saying, weren't they? I think, did you make the point, Peter, on the last show, that Spurs off the back of the Champions League could be a nice little outside bet to bet on West Brom or a draw, which of course happened. But teams did look a bit leggy, and this time of the season going into December, you don't want to start looking leggy, do you?
No, because if you start falling away now, catching up becomes a nightmare, doesn't it?
Yeah. Although Ben Foster's time wasting didn't really help Spurs, did it?
You know what? It's one of my favourite things in football when a team that's time wasting doesn't win. Like, because they just stop, don't they? They immediately stop time-wasting and stop trying to speed things up as if they were never doing it in the first place.
Yeah, like, time-wasting rarely gets a yellow card. When there's a penalty shootout, the keeper basically running at the player who's taking the penalty as soon as, even before the ball's been kicked, that never gets reset.
No.
It drives me mad. It's like, oh, yeah, but, you know, there's bigger things in football. The rules are the rules. Just do it or don't do it.
Well, bigger things, mate.
Do you think Real Madrid could cope with that sort of thing?
I don't know.
It's dreadful.
Probably not. But Ben Foster was eventually booked. But Eric Dier was fuming about this, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was really, really unhappy. And he said the referee knew he was time wasting, but he said, oh, what did he? Let me find the quote here. He said, Eric Dier said that the referee, Mike Jones, said to him that he didn't want to be the referee who blows the whistle for someone holding the ball for longer than 6 seconds because no referee does.
I feel like.
I don't want to be the ref that starts implementing that rule. You're all meant to do it.
It's not the most controversial rule, is it?
Yes.
I think Dyer's been a bit aggy the last couple of weeks, and it's the Dele Alli situation, isn't it? Clearly, he's not taking it well.
But didn't they make up? Weren't they celebrating together recently?
Well, I don't know. Okay. There's clearly some sort of trouble in paradise.
Trouble at Wembley. Ben Foster. We were talking about Tony Pulis and said that Pulis was almost a victim of his own success, believing that Pulis had taken them as far as he could.
Yeah.
And that does make sense.
Oh, we've seen it happen at Stoke as well, you know, and Palace was a weird one. But I think he sort of got out before that could happen. Mm. And it's that style of football, isn't it? You can only get you to sort of the top of the second half. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like
the
top of the kind of second tier within the Premier League, I suppose. And then at that point, things are going to stagnate. Players stop committing to the cause in the same way, and then, you know, obviously results start to suffer.
If you don't get the results, you can't say, well, at least we're knocking the ball around nicely.
Absolutely. I don't think people actually do that, do they?
No.
You know, people always say that when you look at a negative team and go, oh, well, you know, at least if we had enjoyable football and we were losing, we wouldn't mind. But that's never been the case with any fan base ever, is it?
Yeah.
Trying to play really good football, we're terrible at it, and we keep losing, and I'm fine with that. Never happens.
Tony Mowbray tried to argue that, I think, at some point in his career. But yes, you're absolutely right. It is a funny one, but I did enjoy Ben Foster's comments when he said, everybody knows the Tony Pulis style of football, and now we have technically gifted players, presumably who Pulis bought in, by the way.
He was there for a good while.
Yeah, he said, we have technically gifted players who want to get the ball down and show what they can do. It's not necessarily what Tony wanted, to be honest. He brought those players in.
It's not like it was a scintillating performance, though, was it? They tried to frustrate Spurs at every turn, and obviously with time wasting and stuff. So yeah, that's a strange
one. I think it's the lack of joined up thinking that drives fans mad.
Yeah.
Because if you have Pulis, now he signed, you know, Megson hasn't signed anyone, obviously. So Pulis would have brought in a number of those players. He would have inherited some of those players as well. But he was at West Brom for a little bit of time. So to say, well, now we've got technically gifted players and they wanted to do this and then Pulis, you think, you understand why, not that the role of the sporting director always works out. Everton have one, for example. but you understand the thinking behind that. But it is the lack of, I mean, we will talk about Everton in a bit, but who do you then get in? I mean, there's obviously big talk of Alan Pardew going in there.
But yeah, but what does that change? Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Where are they going with that?
But there was a very little interaction about this on Match of the Day between Gary Lineker and Jermaine Genus, which I thought was very revealing in what they thought, because he said to Genus, well, it could be Pardew that comes in. And Genus said, well, you know, he obviously sort of starts well, but then it's sort of peters out a little bit, and Lineker said, well, yeah, there's no risk, and Gina said, why not go for a manager from the Championship or something like that, as you see in other leagues, often in Serie A they kind of do that, but tend to be more well thought out coaches with a little bit more of a skill set. And Lineker said, well, they're just scared of going down. You go down and it's the end of the world, you know. Yes, you get the parachute payments, but you can, as you can see with a number of other clubs,
you can drop off the radar.
Exactly, it can take you so long to get back into the Premier League, the promised ground.
And I mean, is that unreasonable when you look at people running these huge, huge businesses?
No, it's not unreasonable. Absolutely right, Jim, but it doesn't mean to say
you can't be a bit more ambitious.
But who always suffers? The fans.
Yeah.
It's always the same. You know what I mean?
But at the moment, you have got the Lord of the Manor of West Bromwich at the moment. Because he did get awarded that title when I think he brought them in the Premier League.
Is that right?
Yeah, so there we go.
Oh, right.
You could have that in your dugout forever.
Yeah.
And then Darren Huckabee called him a crazed animal on the sidelines back in the day.
So, sorry, but this was Pulis?
Megson.
Megson.
Stick with him. Stick with the Lord Manor.
Yeah. I like what you said about Pardew there, Marcus, which is that his time at clubs tends to peter out, and I think we should remember that. We should christen it that for you, mate, when it starts happening, inevitably, so you can get some joy from it.
Yeah, he peters in, then he peters out.
he Pardew's in, and he peters out.
I found it quite enjoyable when Pardew was talking about West Brom. It's an attractive offer. And just Pardew saying the word attractive, I was like,
ugh. Yeah, grim. Is he managing that part of the world? Going back to the game, it was a very soft goal for Spurs to concede.
Oh, it was!
But I think, like, looking at Davinson Sanchez, he tried to sort of barge into Rondon,
and
he was
winning
he just bounced off him. Oh, Jesus Christ.
He's a big spot.
Well,
I actually thought, because Davinson Sanchez is quite highly rated among a lot of Spurs fans, and you can see why.
Oh, very much so.
But yes, it was very soft. Not every player is going to have these moments, but Rondon, the through ball, Davinson Sanchez kept up with him, but he probably would have outpaced him, I think, if there was another few yards to go. But Rondon kept up there, and this isn't a striker who's in particularly good form. He's fantastic with his head in that game where he scored three headers, which we all remember. I don't know what he's like with his heading, actually, come to think of it, but generally quite good, but not a prolific scorer and not particularly pacey, you would say.
Yeah, with Megson playing it around the deck as he does as well, he's not going to get a chance with his head so much.
That is a good point, Jim. But he took his goal quite well, but it was just so soft, and I think that Spurs at Wembley, it does seem a little bit soft sometimes in the league.
Yeah, I think as well, like, that's a classic example of the tiredness that's coming through from the European games as well, just sort of taking a little while to click into gear.
Yeah, but it was good for Harry Kane to get a goal.
Yeah, his confidence, the world of good.
It certainly was. Shoot across the keeper.
It was a brilliant goal, wasn't it? I know we say this all the time about Harry Kane, but it looked a tap-in, but it was a sort of nutmegged tap-in, first time off the cross. He makes really difficult stuff look really simple.
A nutmegson.
That's the thing with Kane. Like, his movement, you know, just his gait, his body language, he doesn't look like he has the skills that he demonstrably has. It's like he's got a cloaking device for his own talent.
Well, I think it only comes alive when the ball's near him, you know what I mean? He's kind of like a dormant kind of... He's in stasis until the ball comes near him, and then it's like he's incredibly reactionary footballer who just knows exactly where the goal is, and he'll always get a shot away, like I've always said. I love Harry Kane.
Dormant Harry Kane.
Foster also said that at White Hart Lane.
He's been said a lot this week, hasn't he?
Yeah. It was like he got interviewed or something, and I pounced on said interview.
Was he pausing for absolutely ages?
He said at White Hart Lane last year, West Brom couldn't get out of their own half due to Spurs closing them down and so on. And this has reignited with some people the chat about the size of the pitch at White Hart Lane compared to the size of the pitch at Wembley. There was a lot of talk about this during the summer and a lot of concern from people in the Spurs camp about it. Spurs, I think, tried to get the size of the pitch changed, and the FA said, no, you're not going to do that. On behalf of all of your opposition this season, you're not doing that.
I don't think that's necessarily fair, though, is it?
It is a little bit of a difference. I mean, the White Hart Lane pitch last season was the league's second smallest pitch. Stokes was the smallest, for fact fans out there. And it measures 100 by 67 metres. Now, the Wembley pitch is 105 by 69 metres. And you think, well, OK, that's... It's a little bit of a difference, but not too much. But that's a comparison of 6,700 square metres at White Hart Lane against 7,245 square metres.
These sentences belong on a chart. Like a speller. That's impossible to even comprehend.
Yeah. All I'm saying is, as a lot of people already have, that the Wembley pitch is a fair bit bigger than the White Hart Lane pitch.
And I mean, that's going to add to your running stats, isn't it? Inevitably. So.
Of course,
But what have their running stats kind of achieved? I mean, I just sort of think that maybe they've kind of... they're not focusing quite so much on the intensity. They're focusing a little bit more on their passing and their movement more than anything else. So maybe they're just not closing down quite as much.
But then you would think, you would think with
Sanchez is making some more high-profile mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, apart from on the wings, you know, I think it was Gina said that Spurs were lacking a little bit of pace, and I thought, he might have or people that can take on players. Certainly.
Yeah, I mean, there's been talk that their bench maybe didn't look as deep as it could, but Eric Lamella is on the way back, which could make a difference. He's sort of a bit of a forgotten man there. Mm. I know he's had his injury problems and stuff, but, you know, he's been patchy for Tottenham, but when he's been good, he's been fantastic.
Well, he's just
really
injuries.
Fit into that team.
He's almost like, he's beginning to be like the Spurs Santi Cazorla or something, you know, the player that they all want to see back.
Yeah,
he's
just
been out for so long, as you say, you can forget about these players.
Absolutely, but I think, you know, he'll have a part to play, especially when the fixtures start piling up, just to get that fresh injection of creativity and pace in there as well.
Indeed, but at the end of the day, Spurs at Wembley, they played their part. But it was a good point for West Brom. Newcastle didn't really play their part, did they?
No.
Well, they might do on Tuesday when we play West Brom.
Yeah, not at their defensive best against Watford. Weren't you going on about Rafa organising defence, Peter, and solid at the back?
Yeah, but I think this time...
Watford pissed all over your comments, didn't they?
No, they pissed all over my comments because they didn't play defensively, Newcastle, at all. They went for 4-4-2 and they just kind of... they wanted goals. They wanted to score some goals they wanted to hit back at the critics in previous matches.
So in that analogy, just want to clarify, Newcastle pissed all over themselves.
What happened? No, they pissed forward, but a wind caught the piss and the piss hit them full in the face.
Yeah.
Not completely full in the face, because Andre Gray was bloody dreadful, even though he managed to score.
So now St James's Park is covered in piss. Does that reduce the value of the club?
I don't really know.
I don't think that
piss
ever
damaged.
Increases the value of anything, does it?
Yeah, but this is Mike Ashley.
Jellyfish.
Yeah, but it's English piss. That puts another £5 million on the price.
Yeah, but I think that kind of it really does show how the Premier League's moved on since Newcastle were last a cemented Premier League team. Most teams can hit you on the break and they hit you at speed, and Newcastle could not handle that.
No.
Certainly from Andre Gray and co.
Watford had a lovely time. Andre Gray it was an intriguing afternoon for him because he looked like a striker very low on confidence. Mm.
Some of his shots were hilarious.
Yeah. The one after he'd scored at 3-0 up, it looked almost petulant, didn't it? Like he never thought he was going to score, like he was sulking. But after the game, his comments were very interesting. He said that obviously he felt he should have had a hat-trick and should have played better, but the whole team felt that way. And obviously you look at that as a sort of as a rout, but they could have had more, I think
they
you'd agree
they
with
could
that.
They could have had five or six, and I think if they'd have needed more goals, they would have scored.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really telling that they still feel like that. I think the success of Richarlison as a signing as well has allowed Gray to sort of have this little period of grace, and getting that goal will be really, really good for him. But it was strange attitude from him. Hosselu at the other end, for you guys, he had a bit of an air shot in the first half, didn't he? And then later in the second half, shot straight at the keeper. But is that a sign that he's starting to work out how this works?
This whole footballing thing works.
Where he's meant to be put in.
He's a conceptual striker. Well, he offers something that John Joe Shelby certainly leads, like, because he just lofts balls up and teams like Watford kind of figure that out and go, well, we can clear those every day.
Don't have a go at John.
I know you love John so much because he's ex-Fulham, but, you know,
he's not ex-Fulham.
Is he not ex-Fulham?
No, ex-Charlton.
Ex-Charlton, sorry.
There's not necessarily any rhyme or reasons why Marcus said
But he just, like, lofts balls up, and sometimes it works. Most of the time, it's not going to work in the Premier League because people don't have time to kind of...
But when it works very well.
But Hosselu is a good kind of hold-up kind of player, but he's just got no one to lay off with. It was a stinking performance.
Newcastle are trying to get goals out of Dwight Gayle, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, he's the only one who seems to know where the back of the net is, and Rafa doesn't rate Mitrovic.
Well, the fans are calling for Mitrovic.
Well, but they do that every week. But the problem is, like, he brings them on where we're like 3-0 down against, or 3-1 down against Manchester United, 3-0 down against Watford.
He can't spoil anything. Yeah. That's what he's thinking.
He ain't going to get.
Well, they want that Benitez's problem. Well, look, he's not the sort of player to dig you out of the hole when you're 3-0 down at home. Can I rely on him? He's not going to come on and get four.
I think it's because Benitez likes his team to be very, very well organised, as well, I know all managers do, but particularly Benitez. And Mitrovic is a little bit of a raggy maverick, isn't he?
Well, I would argue that more Diame does more damage to the Newcastle side than Mitrovic ever could, even if he gets sent off. It's just it's like playing with 10 men with more Diame because he looks like he's drunk all the time.
Benitez said after the game that he didn't feel it was a lack of passion or character that cost him the game, but more mistakes. And looking at the game, I don't know if I agree with that.
It was a high line. That's what Benitez every time.
I think he's just obviously trying to protect his players from criticism there. That's four losses on the bounce now. Rafa out?
Yes, Rafa out. Get rid of him. Goodbye to bad rubbish.
Yeah, Ashley still hasn't sold the club.
No. Mm. So that one pans out. I do wonder how Daryl Yanmat sort of thought, looking on the looking from the bench and just watching.
What, the Watford bench?
The Watford bench is looking on and going, "What did I leave? I don't know. I don't really sure what's going on here." But I would say that Jamal Lascelles is looking better and better as the week's gone, because he's not been playing. He's not played in the four defeats we've had. So.
Well, because he's been negotiating on behalf of Amanda Stapley, has he not?
No.
Is there an argument that he's your only player?
Turns out.
Oh dear. Well, below Newcastle in the league, way below Newcastle at Crystal Palace, of course. And Roy the Boy Hodgson got his first win, or second win in the league, as Crystal Palace manager, of course. They beat Chelsea. Palace are now 3 points from 17th position. So there is a little bit of light creeping through the blinds at Crystal Palace. He said the other week that they were playing better, but they need wins. Well, they've got another one there.
Yeah, and a late one as well, which will
always
lift
pleasing
their confidence as well, because they're going to have to dig some of those out inevitably. That's, if you're going to be in a relegation scrap, you're going to have to win games late on. And they did well. It's a great goal from Shaqiri, wasn't it?
It was a lovely
really
one.
Beautiful to see.
He has those moments in him, Shaqiri.
He does, and he's had a few lately, and I hope he can find that consistency. I really like him as a player. I think it's interesting watching Jonathan Pearce commentate on him, because he must sort of think, is this robot wars or football with this guy? I can't tell. It's sort of a mixture of the two.
Indeed. But this is the thing about Shaqiri. Everyone knows he's got those moments, which is why he's been at the likes of Bayern Munich and Inter. Mm. But it's the consistency. It's obviously an attitude thing there, and so on and so forth. Probably he's one of those players who needs to be a big fish in a smaller pool, which is absolutely fine. Mm. You know. And if he continues to do that, he will continue to find himself in the hearts and minds of the Stoke City faithful.
Can we talk about Ryan Shawcross?
A specific moment in the game?
Yes.
Yeah, he had a few.
That sort of M.C. Escher-style shot, sort of off the line. I don't know how he didn't score that. It was incredible.
Because he was clearing it. Amazing. He got confused.
He did. Like, he just hit it with a completely wrong part of his foot, I suppose.
Trying to lace it when it's in the air.
Yeah. Use your head.
Yeah. Use your studs.
Do you think Stoke could get dragged in to all this? Because it's a weird one at the moment because of all the promoted teams doing so well.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Palace are on the move, aren't they? Clearly, since Hodgson's been there, I think they've won two, drawn two, and lost two, I think is what it was, having lost absolutely everything when De Boer was in charge, which seems odd thinking of Frank De Boer in charge of Crystal Palace now, doesn't it? It seems like a long time ago. So Palace are on the march. Bournemouth have started to pick up a few points and so on. It is, I think, the relegation scrap. Let's be honest, the title race is not going to be a particularly enthralling one, because Man City look as like they're going to run away with it. But I think the relegation battle could be very interesting.
Well, there's going to be those teams that have kind of stuck around in the Premier League for, say, 5-6 years now. Mm-hmm. So one of them is probably going to go down. So that's going to be quite an exciting little battle.
Well, I mean, it could be three of them, realistically.
Mm. Yeah, Everton, down.
Yeah.
Stoke, down.
West Brom, down. West Ham, you go as well.
You sound a bit like West Brom, get out.
Should there be a rule that if teams have performed really, really badly, it's like that. A fourth team are going down. This is to encourage better football.
Yeah. Like a power vacuum sucks you in as well. I enjoyed Andros Townsend in the post-match not knowing who scored the winner.
Did he not?
He went, sorry, I didn't even see who scored. I was like,
did we win?
All right, Andros.
I wonder what that cheer was.
Just too giddy.
Zaha and Townsend seem to be Hodgson's preferred strike force to start with, certainly. But Benteke came on to good effect. And actually freed up Zaha a little bit. Hodgson's having a little tinker. And actually, there are a couple of nice options there up front for Palace. You know, Zaha and Townsend, that has reaped a few rewards for Hodgson so far. But Benteke, you know, a proven Premier League striker. Maybe not at the top level. Obviously, struggled a little bit at Liverpool. But, you know, some score goals in the league. There's no doubt about that. And gives them a very different option than, say, Zaha and Townsend.
I think that's going to pay off sooner or later as well, because the last goal was a real great example of how hard they're working now. You know, they had a lot of bites of that cherry before it actually went in. And it's great just to see them really knocking on the door late on. They didn't have the confidence to do that at the start of the season. I know we made the point they were actually playing well, despite, you know, losing and not scoring. But, you know, they did such a huge improvement now. And Benteke, I mean, unless I'm hugely misremembering this, I remember him seeming to be a very sort of skillful player when he was at Villa in particular, and seeming very comfortable with the ball at his feet, and he now seems to be portrayed as this kind of lumbering kind of, you know, like target man. But I think there's surely more to come from him, especially with Zaha and Townsend like bringing so much energy to that front line.
I think you're right. I think Benteke has now sort of been pigeonholed as a sort of
just a big header,
continental sort of Peter Crouch or something.
Yeah,
I think Roy's a bit of an underrated kind of man manager. Like, he can always like, put an arm around a player and go, what the hell's going on in five languages?
Yeah. That's right, yeah. We're 2-1 down to Iceland at half time. Come on, lads. Let's get a bit of confidence.
You're going to bring that up because he's not Sven.
Both of them disappointed me at England level ultimately. So,
but will Loftus-Cheek is the question.
Yeah, well, got a goal. Good for him.
It did.
Bloody good for him. It's good
and
to
good
see.
For England.
Yes.
Good for the empire. Good for the royal babies. Good for bulldogs.
And
all
good,
of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good for Harry, who's, you know, announced his engagement this week. Is that right?
The Markle.
Yeah, Harry Kane I'm talking about.
Oh.
No,
yeah.
I'm joking.
There you go.
But yeah, you're absolutely right, Jim.
I'm probably telling you something you're already aware of, but did you read once that Loftus-Cheek's mum got struck by lightning while she was holding Loftus-Cheek?
What?
Like back in the day? Well, he used to live in Kent.
That's
an origin story, isn't it? But then Loftus-Cheek.
Is that where he got his footballing powers?
And then Loftus-Cheek's house got hit by lightning, I think, last year.
What does that mean?
He's a superhero.
But is he getting more power or is it being taken away?
Like, hang on, no. But so this is when he was a kid, he got struck by lightning.
Yeah.
Okay, so that gave him his original football powers. Yes. We can all quite assume, because that's very scientific.
Yeah.
And
then his house
last
got hit.
Year.
Yeah.
And then no sooner has he been struck by lightning again, he's starting for England and he's scoring goals in the prem.
Maybe that's what he needs, like every 20 years or so to get struck by lightning. And it would be amazing.
I mean, when he's at Chelsea, he was out on loan fast as lightning. Get him out of there.
Well, let's hope he gets gently struck by lightning if a thing could happen just before the World Cup, you know, and
instant Metas explosion. Well, that was the entry point for the lightning, guys.
Yeah. Turns out getting struck by lightning doesn't give you powers. Yeah. Just really hurts.
Gives you ACL.
As long as it enables him to score a penalty in a shootout. That's all we want. And Palace have got their rivals Brighton this week.
Yeah.
The odd rivalry that exists between Palace
and
Brighton.
Love that.
Yeah, indeed. Right, we're going to talk about Everton.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
After this.
I better go to the cash point and get some money, if I've got any money left.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Before we do, let's go now live in this pre-recorded podcast to Pete Donaldson, who's got some emails.
You all right, mate? You all right? Yes, there is a lot of emails. A bumper week for emails, has to be said. A lot of emails this week with variations on the subject line, oh God, not Pardew. Elliot Jones managed to reference Pardew over 100 times, thanks to some deft copying and pasting. Adam Hess says, well, at least the Ramble will cover the baggies a little bit more.
Yeah.
So there we go.
That's true.
Nicholas Cook has noticed that the Chelsea miscreant Marco van Ginkel's real name is Wulfert Cornelis van Ginkel.
Oh, not very much so.
Love that.
Hello to Callum Foster. Hello all. On Friday evening, I had the misfortune of experiencing the panic of the Oxford Circus in inverted commas attack, which turned out not to be. Two highlights for me. Weird one, Callum.
Okay.
Firstly, at the time, I had the Ramble's most recent episode playing in my earphones, meaning my escape from terror was set to the soundtrack of Donaldson Spell It et al., which I didn't think it prudent to pause until I'd ran 100 yards.
I think we would. I think that's what they should do. Because obviously, you know, it's quite a potentially serious matter. It turned out not to be. Mm. Just get the old Football Ramble on this loudspeaker.
Just relax,
it should
everyone.
Be a calming effect.
Well, I was caught up in it as well, and I let a Spanish family into my. A couple of Spanish families, in fact, into my house.
Have you been told?
They're still in there.
Haven't you been told about that? trapping families in your own.
Callum goes on. Secondly, my own lack of physical fitness was highlighted when, during the sprint away, I was overtaken by a Chinese girl with 10 Primark bags. Heartbreaking. Thank you for that, Callum. Hello to Dom. Can we please make sure Michael Oliver gets the mention he deserves for falling over in the Liverpool-Chelsea game?
Once
he got up, just throwing his hands in the air as if to say, sod off, for all the crowd jeering me on. A true top-class performance.
Yeah, that was enjoyable.
Alex,
it was a good game.
It was a good game. Alex says, my highlight of the weekend was the post-match interview from Nigel Clough. There's no reason why we should win any game in this division. Cheers, Nigel.
Talking yourself out of a job. There's your joined up thinking.
Jay Reid, been doing a comprehensive re-listen of all the Rambles and during the episode of Boys of Summer from 2011, which I think might have been a classic. It does get mentioned every now and again.
I assume that they all are.
There was a discussion about the under-21 championships and the conversation moved on to a then 19-year-old Shaqiri and how he was a sticky lad. This prompted Marcus to joke that in 5 to 6 years' time, he's going to be plying his trade at Bolton. Well, fast forward and he's playing for Stoke, arguably the modern Bolton.
Yeah, there we are. I've been aware someone has kindly quoted me on that before. I mean, you know, sometimes a blind squirrel will find a Swiss footballer.
That was from Jay Reid, possibly still the official boiler fixer of the Ramble. If you want to get in touch with the show, shortthefootballramble.com is the way to do that.
There we are, you see, ladies and gentlemen. That's as easy as emailing Peter. Now, it's fair to say that David Unsworth won't be getting the job permanently.
Yeah, I think can you sack a caretaker manager?
You can demote him, certainly.
Yeah, that would be really undignified when someone else gets a go now.
I feel sorry for people for a man like David Unsworth. Very passionate about the club, has been a great servant to the club on and off the field and in the backroom staff and all the rest of it. But he's clearly not the man for the job, you would say. But the circumstances have been incredibly difficult. And actually, I say he's not the man for the job. I don't think he is, because I think the way the situation is, you need someone coming in, or, you know, on a flipping horseback and just trying to save the day.
Yeah.
But we don't really know what Unsworth's like as a number one on the basis of this, because it's such a mess. And imagine every time you're doing an interview, it's, well, what's happening with the job? What's going on? And so on. You can't settle. But
also, as well, I think for Unsworth, he is such a passionate fan of the club, clearly. Yeah. I think in this instance, I'm not saying that would always be the case, but it feels like this is actually maybe hindering him as well, because he's so emotionally invested in it.
That's right.
He's broken after every defeat, and that makes it harder for you to pick the team up and motivate them. I just feel it looks a bad fit given the circumstances. It looks like Martin O'Neill's name is being banded around a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's that'd be an interesting one. I mean, it's a million miles away from what they would have wanted when they sacked Ronald Koeman, but it does feel like it's going to have to be a huge compromise at this point, isn't it? They're never going to get anyone that they were targeting. Dyche clearly is happy at Burnley by the looks of it. Marco Silva's going nowhere. I can't remember a situation like this.
They do have a lot of money to spend, to be fair.
They've spent it all.
This is it, isn't it?
I mean, it would be unthinkable for a side to have spent the money they have, you know, 140 million or whatever it is, and then go down. I mean, you know, we remember perhaps a 90s equivalent in Middlesbrough when they bought Ravanelli and Janino and so on, and they ended up going down.
Well, do you remember when Leeds went down? people were waiting to sort of pick that team apart because it was a team where, like, pretty much everyone in that first 11, when you think, oh, they'll get a move to a Premier League club, and you'd look at that and go, well, why doesn't that work as a team? It would be a similar thing.
Yeah, that, I mean, that was very strange when they went down, but it was just a lot of stuff behind the scenes, which shows can affect.
Absolutely.
You know, when people say, oh, well, the players, you know, that they've got a job to do. Yes, that's absolutely true. And of course, when the referee blows his whistle, you would like to think that they could block that out, as I know, you know, footballers have to do on a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of mental toughness there. My goodness, a number of players can do that amazingly well. But
if every team you come up against is better prepared than you, then you're going to struggle, aren't you? Which is clearly what's happening.
It did. I mean, Southampton have not really scored many goals at all.
No, I think they'd scored 4 goals from open play all season up to now, and they've got 4 in the same game.
And they were all over them. I mean, I know...
They're excellent, Southampton, as well. Got to give them some credit.
Absolutely right, and we need to mention that Sigurdsson strike because it was beautiful.
£50 million repaid.
He scored a couple of spectacular ones.
He has, yeah.
But
that crossbar was getting a beating
at
the weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Bang.
Martin Keown asked the question because Everton are at home to David Moyes' West Ham, who themselves, of course, got a point on Friday against Leicester City. Martin Keown asked the question, is this the biggest game in Everton's history?
That is astounding, isn't it? They've won the league.
Yeah, I mean, they won an FA Cup final. I can remember that.
Yeah.
I can't remember them winning the league. You know, they stayed at Howard Kendall. Remember that game? Was it last game when they kept... It's not the biggest... I mean, look, I appreciate what Kieran's saying there to an extent, but it wouldn't even be in the top 10. But it is a big game, no doubt. But Everton have conceded 28 goals this season, more than any other side in the Premier League.
Leaky.
They are. They're not really sort of creating too much. Or not. They need a new manager and fast.
It's Jordan Pickford, I feel. The most beleaguered goalkeeper probably in Premier League history already after having played for Sunderland as well.
Is thinking, I left Sunderland.
Yeah.
Gee, come on, guys. Help me out. Really good at this, but you're mugging me off.
If Luke's England logic is to be believed, we should be giving him the Ballon d'Or now, to be honest. He's had a shitty season, hasn't he? He's been under siege.
A more positive note for Everton, though, was that their famous or infamous... No, famous fan, Speedo Mick, was there at the match doing his bit for LGBT awareness, of course, as all the league was. Which was good to say. But
why have they re-released those laces? Because I had a pair of those. I wore them about 5 years ago.
It's an annual thing, isn't it? The rainbow laces thing.
So there we are. Yeah.
What a cesspit Twitter becomes every year.
I've seen a man dressed like Speedo Mick doing his own
in the swimming pool.
His own work for LGBT awareness in the bar on the corner from me called Village. Dancing about.
Yeah, he's there every Friday night.
They got go-go dances in there, and it's a gay bar.
But there is a lot of LGBT awareness in Soho.
Charlie Austin, starting his first game of the season, got a double. Two lovely headers.
Yeah, it's good to see, wasn't it?
It's always pleasing to see an old-fashioned number 9 getting goals like
Absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, yeah. I think you forget about Charlie Austin. And part of me, it's the sort of Dean Ashton thing. I look at him and think, can you be England's saviour?
I know what you mean.
Can you be the sort of Alan Shearer type that we've been holding out for?
England need a goal. They're going to bring on Charlie Austin. It's not quite the same, but you want it to be, but it's not, is it, really? No. Let's be honest. But it bodes well.
I didn't like that they brought him off at 80 minutes. It's like, let him stay. Let him get his hat trick.
But it's his first start, I think.
Let him get his hat trick.
That's a fair point. Let him get his hat trick, Southampton. That's a rule that you should abide by. But it bodes very well for Southampton. Charlie Austin getting a couple of goals and Tadic among the goals as well. So well done to them.
Yeah. Hey. It's a nice confidence booster, which is Everton's subtitle of the season. The confidence booster.
Yeah, they need to... They need to get rid of that. My goodness. Let's go down to the Championship. Cardiff got a good win away to Nottingham Forest. Keeps them 4 points behind Wolves. Mm. We're obviously including this because Neil Warnock said something mildly amusing. It was a lovely, thinly veiled dig at them. Or was it thinly veiled? I'll let you be the judge, ladies and gentlemen. He said, it does not get any better than this. 3 wins in a week. We will not get carried away. Wolves will probably spend another £20 million in January.
That is a fatly veiled dig.
If they've got the money, Neil, it's perfectly...
They can do that.
I understand not that much nowadays.
Championship, though, goes a little bit further.
Second goal was a screamer in that game as well. Well worth checking out.
It doesn't get any better than that. 3 wins in a week. He's right. 3 wins in a week. Very impressive. Very impressive indeed. Sunderland finally won again.
Yay.
Well done them. Their first win since August. Although it was away from home.
Yeah.
That home win is still
elusive.
Proving to be elusive, although they were playing away from home. So it's not their fault that they didn't win at home on the weekend.
Well, it is their fault they haven't been winning at home, though, isn't it?
Yeah, all the other weeks they have.
Hugely culpable.
In 2017, that's right. Well, they haven't won at home since the 17th of December 2016. They play Reading next Saturday and Fulham on the 16th of December. So they've 2 chances to ensure they don't go a whole year at home without winning a league match.
I mean,
do you hope that they do?
I hope that they do for the sake of North East football. It's a bit of a
go a year.
No, I hope
why
they
not
win.
Two, Peter?
Be
I
honest,
hope they
Pete,
win.
Your voice says one thing and your smile says another.
Peter, I'm a Steve Watson at Gateshead fan.
Peter, you would love it if their first home win or their next home win comes in League One.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't like that.
No, you wouldn't like that. Stop nodding your head then. Norwich drew 1-1 at home with Preston. The big story from this game was that the assistant referee got injured, so the fourth official took over from him. However, they didn't have anyone to fulfil fourth official duties, so the referee was considering abandoning the match. I think the players sort of came off at one point. It was a lot of confusion going on in the ground, and this meant they had to send a message appealing to any qualified referees in the crowd. And a chap called David Thornhill, nicknamed Spud, apparently, answered the call, and he came on, and he was seen topless because he had to take his top off and then put the match official jacket. So
you sounded very tabloid then.
he was seen
topless.
Spotted topless.
Showing off his curves.
Spud, all growed up.
He had to signal at least 10 minutes of added time due to the changeover of officials.
Did you see him trying to work the ball to do it? He probably added three.
Yeah. I mean, chances are you don't get a lot of matches kind of below a certain level that even has a fourth official. So that's probably the first time he's ever done fourth official duties.
I love that, though. Although you can't really... You can't really do too much apart from the injury time stuff.
Yeah,
but he was a Norwich fan, so presumably he wanted a bit more.
I don't know, work this bloody thing. Yeah.
But you can't give any kind of overtly biased decisions as a fourth official, can you? I don't think. You can maybe stop the opposition bringing on a sub or something. No, we're not ready yet. You know, they're desperate to bring on another defender.
Don't trip the sub up.
Yeah, but well done, Spud. Well done.
Good on you.
Great stuff. Right, let's go to a quick ad break, and afterwards we've got a couple of cup finals to talk about.
I deeply regret the comments I made.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Do not forget that the preview show sponsored by Bet365 is out on Friday.
Don't you dare forget!
Our better didn't get his bet.
He didn't get his bet. I like to think that he was all right. He was quite close because Salah scored in like the 60th minute.
What was the bet?
Well, the bet was Liverpool to win at half time.
To be winning at half time.
To be winning at half time.
Which they weren't.
So why lose at full time.
Which they didn't.
Why so generous to the losing better?
I'm just saying, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt that Salah scored quite fairly early in the first half.
There's no doubt. Factually, he didn't get the bet.
All right, well, Sam Westover, fuck you, all right? Not my words, Sam.
No,
Marcus Speller's
Sam,
words.
We appreciate you.
Daylight consultant.
Contributing.
Marcus turning the light off on your chances of winning some money for prostate cancer.
No, he got the bet wrong.
Well, let's just hope that somebody...
It's not how betting works. Oh, well, you know, I said it was going to be 2-0. I know it was 3-0. Do I get any money? No.
I used to work in a betting shop, Marcus, and I was very fluid when it came to...
Imagine me working in a betting shop.
So, yes, we'll have a new person in the hot seat this coming Friday on the Bet365 show. So.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
Pete working in a betting shop.
I know. Let's move on.
We must read out your CV at some
point. Yeah, can we have your employment history at some point?
Betting shop, zoo. Making 3D point of sale things for Gillette.
Yeah, I never. That was one I never knew.
Cutting up pork for Leicester City.
Cutting up pork for Leicester City.
Specifically,
paper pork? Round.
Yeah, we order paper
Football
round.
Football ramble.
Housing Quangor marketing executive.
You what? Rewind and tell us everything.
For Move UK, helping people move out of London to social housing elsewhere in the UK.
Also, the prices would go down and you could buy. You're an absolute disgrace. Right, the Scottish League Cup's happened. It's all over. Celtic have won it. November sees Celtic win their first trophy of the season. I'm glad Luke's not here because he would absolutely pan this. He doesn't like the fact that there's a trophy being concluded on the British Isles in November.
Too early.
I agree with him.
Do you?
Massively.
Yeah, I do. It's weird. But I do like that, you know, Celtic have had the opportunity to get absolutely panelled by PSG and then just respond by winning a cup.
Brendan Rodgers is very pleased about that.
Yeah.
Very pleased indeed. Yeah, they beat Motherwell 2-0 in the final. So the thought of back-to-back trebles, domestic trebles, of course, is on. For Celtic. I did like this quote from Brendan Rodgers. He said, of course, after the hammering by PSG, said, we had to tick a few character boxes after midweek. And you know as well, that is literal. He's handed out the questionnaires. Have you got it? It's like one of those US customs forms or something. Are you an absolute head case and are you going to do one? I'm not going to tick any of them.
Are you a communist?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not true. But also, even if it was, I'm going to skip around that. So yeah, Rodgers saying, well, have you got the character? Well, yes.
He's opened a few character envelopes today as Rodgers.
Well, and they've all got medals in.
Mm.
because they won yet another trophy. But the Scottish League Cup is not the only trophy that has concluded in November. The Copa Libertadores in South America is concluded in November too. And this year's final features Grêmio from Brazil and Lanús, I think that's pronounced, from Argentina. Now, the first leg ended 1-0 to Grêmio, and the second leg will be played this week. Nicolas Russo, the president of Argentine side Lanús, has accused Grêmio of naughtiness, quite frankly, in the first leg, suggesting they used, in his quote, aggressive ball boys who were aged between 35 and 40.
Which is... When do they become ball men?
Ball men. Ball bastardos.
The ball men. Yeah.
Well, I'd love them if they were just dressed as like school kids. We're like little worry pops.
Yeah. Well, according to Russo, he said, one ball boy tried to punch our keeper, but he missed. And there is footage of
that's
this.
All right, then.
Wow.
That's allowed.
Jim, he missed.
Jim, what are you going to say next? He missed, mate.
All right. Jim, they fired a missile, but it missed. Don't worry.
My God.
Imagine that, though.
Marcus Speller's giddy aunt. Imagine this happening in the Champions League, which is it's the literal equivalent of.
It is, yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
What's going on down at Grêmio?
I don't know. What if, like, Liverpool were right to Sevilla and it was, like, men in their late 30s, yeah, ball boy?
Yeah. And one of them,
Spice
like,
men.
Tried to chin Diane Lovren.
Not a Liverpool fan, you're presumably.
No, no.
Well, Liverpool keep putting on that Nivea. Yeah. They're going to look incredibly young, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah. Well, it'll just slide off them because of the moisturiser. The Grêmio coach, Renato Gaúcho, great name, was apparently caught using a drone to film Lannis' training in the build-up to the match.
Which is... Personally, he was doing it.
It was either him or one of his backroom staff. I'm not quite sure. I can't confirm or deny who had the drone, but he was definitely involved. But he didn't seem to care about this, responding with, "Sure, we hired a spy. It's normal. People need to get over it." I love the fact that he's referring to a drone as a spy.
Yeah, but to be fair to him, is that so terrible and immoral? People try and do this all the time, don't they? Like, sort of get the inside track on the other club's training.
But you're not allowed to, though. That's the point.
But how can you possibly kind of, like, figure out what the hell's going on from, like, above? And not be able to really see anybody's lips.
I love the fact that, imagine the team training and all here is... Yeah. Hovering around.
Well, surely you just look at the team shape and think this is how they're going to set up and, you know, see what drills they're doing.
I think that would be it for the shape, wouldn't it? In fact, it's ideal to get that sort of bird's eye view.
Yeah, kind
of
like watching it on telly.
Well, Gary Neville, when he was, infamously at Valencia, he tried to get a...
Jump on a drone.
Hire a drone player.
Yeah, like a fireman's lift. And so he could check out the sort of patterns of the play.
How did he fail?
Yeah, I don't know. I do not know. But then...
What I'm going to do is I'll start with the bells and whistles and we'll work backwards from there.
But do you remember the... I forget which Italian side it was. When their training ground, that is quite a picturesque place. Forgive me, it might be Genoa. I can't remember if they were the spyer or the spyee. Mm. There was a training ground where there's like a kind of a hillside with a bit of forest on it. And a guy was caught in camouflage gear spying on their training from the opposite side. The picture. Do you remember that? It was maybe 2 years, 3 years ago.
Can you imagine how embarrassing that would be for that guy?
There's an amazing photo of it, which is worth a Google, by the way. He's looking like he's caught with his trousers down.
Yeah, I love like managers getting caught doing like their job, but a bit not like Bielsa. Bielsa was caught watching the match on a laptop this week.
Oh, was he? Because he's been banned.
Yeah, in a cafe or something.
Yeah, well, but is that not okay? Because he's been banned from Lille or wherever
he is. Can he just do that at home?
I don't know.
Story about Mourinho when he was Chelsea manager, when he was put in the laundry basket and then taken into the Chelsea dressing room. I mean, that was obviously never confirmed, but you'd love to think that was true.
Very much so.
Yeah, indeed. Naughty. Yeah. So, yeah, well done. And we look forward to the second leg. It's on Wednesday this week.
Yeah. I think it's more of an example of these clubs just having these employees that just if you need them to do something weird, like the Chinese clubs, like running people off the road.
Oh, man, yeah.
Who is the man that you send to go and spy?
You'll need a drone shooter, downer.
You will.
I mean, you will. A bloke with a...
Ashley Cole with a pea shooter. Yeah. Banging them down.
There we are.
Speaking of South America, did you see Leo Messi's disallowed goal at the weekend?
Oh, my goodness.
That was so blatant.
It was Pedro Mendes at Old Trafford-esque.
It was Lampard against Germany, mate.
Yeah, that's
what it was.
Yeah, have some passion.
Have some passion, mate.
I'll have some passion fruit. And now we'll have a bit of going for gold.
We will have a little bit of going for gold. When they're going for gold.
upload.
Or whatever we called the JJ thing last week, I forget. To be
still angry about that.
Still angry about that. Thank you very much to Ben Cattell, or Cattell, for coming up with this one. He writes a phonetic spelling, a pronunciation for his name, so thank you, Ben. Are you ready?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Let's jump straight in. I was born on the 11th of March, 1976. Okay. I played 66 times for my national team, scoring 5 goals. One of my favourite players, this.
Stop. Scott Sellers. 66 English caps. Stop. Philippe Albert.
No. In a World Cup qualifier against Iceland, I scored 2 goals, and Mike Tyson, who was present, was so impressed he asked for my shirt.
Ooh.
Mm.
Are you just making sort of Geordie noises to try and trick him into saying who it is?
I had 2 spells in the Premier League, both at the same club.
Stop. John Arnorisa.
Not John Arnorisa.
Oh, lovely guest. Thanks, man.
Lovely. I am married to Czech model Camilla Purse. Or Pelsi.
Stop. Sasa Churchich.
I
say him all the time. And one day it's going to pay off because you're forgetful. Stop. Milan Baroš.
No.
He had more than one Premier League.
In August 2006, after a hard tackle on Robinho, a scuffle erupted between us.
Stop. Thomas Gravesen.
Thomas Gravesen!
Oh, no. I remember he signed for Real Madrid and they said, we've signed the best player in Denmark. It's like, not everything has to be the best. Just sign players, you dicks.
Manager Fabio Capello said this about me. The way he is, we won't have problems with him. He's just a little bit particular. I don't mess with him. He works well tactically. His behaviour is like this and I don't like it. Everything has to be done like he wants it to be done. An ex-teammate revealed that he once brought fireworks and a paintball gun to work and fired upon staff and a 58-year-old physio. My nickname in Spain was the Ogre, and I won the Scottish Premier League with Celtic in the 06-07 season, scoring my first goal against arch-rivals Rangers. I'm now a poker player / investor.
Fireworks and a paintball gun.
Yeah, like, what kind of...
Who turns up to work?
Clothes,
who turns up with either?
But start shooting all the stuff. Well, like, he gets paint on his clothes and goes, I'm going to have to wash that now. No, you're not. I'm going to burn it.
Well, he's turning up going, one day we're going to have to shoot these cameras out of the sky. rival teams.
Ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Thomas Gravesen. Bit of Thomas Gravesen. I thought he was brilliant.
Really? Why was he one of your favourites?
He was just a tenacious, skillful footballer.
I enjoyed
him. And you don't normally get to see both at the same time.
Yeah. No, he was like an elegant pit bull, wasn't he? And he and Lee Carsley in the middle.
Yeah.
Two bald men.
That was him.
That was right.
Fighting over a football.
He looked a bit like one of my favourite actors as well, Noy the Albanoy.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, that's nice. Yeah, when Gravesen signed for Real Madrid, I think the fans were quite excited because they thought, finally, we've replaced Claude Makélélé.
Yeah.
And not quite. But I remember the bust up with Robinho, hence my answer, of course. But there we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us. Thank you, Jim Campbell.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Pete Donaldson.
Thank you, James, and you.
Yeah, James?
Yes.
And thank you, Pete. Don't want you to get left out here.
Peter, thank you.
There we are. We will reconvene, ladies and gentlemen, on the preview show on Friday.
See you then.
Fuck off.
Easy. So happily married man, Jim.
Yeah, I'm suggesting nothing.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.